You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
Where do you get them, Lou? Just tell us where you get
them. Oh, boy. I think that's a great. Wait till I get you alone, Jamie.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
All right, Jerry's at 5:30. NFL divisional weekend rapidly approaching. I was reading earlier this afternoon because the Seahawks are in Atlanta, and that's the hometown of Future, the rapper. And oh, yeah. He used to be engaged to Ciara, who's now married to Russell Wilson. And apparently they're going to play Future multiple times throughout the game to try to rattle Wilson's cage. And I was laughing about
this. How do you know this garbage?
Yeah, it's out there.
It's a fake news.
No, it's not fake news.
That never happened.
This is real news.
You are fake news.
Yeah, you are.
I'm telling you, because the DJ.
Yes.
He has, I guess, a Twitter account, and he was responding to people tweeting at him about this idea that he wasn't allowed to play music featuring Future. Right. Because Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Falcons, said, no, that's not going to happen. Like, we're not going to do that. We're going to be more respectful here.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, have a little bit of class and respect. But well, people don't have that.
Jay Envy, the DJ, said, yes. I'm playing it. I'm going to play it, and to be honest, no one has hit me up directly saying I can't play the records I normally play.
Yeah. Well, Jay Envy is...
I would be careful, Jay, because I think if the head coach makes the call, something tells me he has more clout than you.
Yeah, and he won't have a job. He'll be DJing at a supermarket.
Which he probably does on the side anyway, I would think.
Well, either
way. Eight home games a year.
I hate stuff like that. That's a lack of class.
See, that's interesting. I could see you guys as former players, you wouldn't like it. I don't think it's the end of the world.
It's just ignorant. Like, it's really ignorant. Like, people have
passed.
It's a
low blow. Like, it's a kick in the pills. It's just...
You know what you're doing, for sure. You're saying, this guy used to be engaged to your wife.
Yeah.
Obviously, they had a relationship.
Yeah, like...
We're all adults. We know what that means.
Everyone has a past. Like, it's... Like, move on from it. But people are just... They're morons. That DJ's a moron. He's DJ moron.
You're calling the DJ in Atlanta a moron.
Yeah, if he's going to be a hero, if that's how he's going to.
Well, he's claiming, man. He's going to take advantage. This guy's claiming he has full autonomy over all the music at the Georgia Dome. So we'll see. I have a feeling he's going
to
lose out.
I'd like to see if he does it, if he has a job next year.
I could see that probably leading down that road.
Because there could be a backlash.
Jerry's on. If he plays the tunes or not.
All right. Maybe Jerry will pop in with that kind of commentary in about a half an hour. I would also say, don't poke the bear. You know, Russell Wilson, he's going to be motivated anyway, but don't get him rattled to the point where he's like, all right, I'll take it out on your football team.
Did he break up with her?
I almost said two-time Super Bowl champion, but they puked their guts out.
Don't tell Richard Sherman that.
Yeah.
Did he break up with her or
I don't
break
know
up
the
with
details.
Him? Well, you seem to know everything else.
No, like, I know stupid stuff. Like if a DJ's going to play the music.
You are fake news.
You are fake news. You're Cliff
Clavin. I'm not fake news. This is legit news. This is a big story in the NFL. Anyway, we had Lou Lamoriello join us yesterday, and I asked him about the core. Like, does he feel like they have the core in place already that will build to a championship caliber with experience? And this is what Lou had to say about that yesterday.
When you know you've got core players, they stick right out. I've been very fortunate in the past organization I was in to have a handful of core players, and I know what difference they made with reference to young players or any transactions or any new players. We still have to see who these core players are. They haven't surfaced. And I hate the word potential, but I will use it here. The potential of having a handful in this group here is there.
So, you know, Lou was being pretty careful. He didn't want to come out and say, yeah, absolutely, we've got the core of a dynasty on our hands.
Right.
Which you can understand because these rookies have only played 39 games together. They're still trying to figure out exactly what they're going to have down the stretch run, let alone 3-5 years down the road.
Right.
But we'll go around the table here before we bring Ray in. I think they do. I think they've got the core here. Would you like a top 10 defenseman to be added to the list? Of course you would. Is that realistic?
So
I don't think it is.
Freddie Anderson, Morgan Riley, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, William Nylander?
I would add Kadri to that on a six-year deal. And I think I would add Gardner and Zaitsev in terms of the overall.
Yeah, but when you're talking core players, you're not talking like 10 guys, bro. You're talking, like, you look
five,
at Chicago,
six.
It's Crawford, it's Keith, it's Seabrook, Taze, Kane, Hossa. There's six.
I would throw Jalmerson in there, though. He's been there for the whole run.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
So that's seven.
That's seven. That's three defensemen and three forwards for the most part, and a goalie. And I have Matthews, Kadri, Marner, Nylander, Riley, Gardner, Zaitsev, Anderson.
I think
Kadri's that's my core
replaceable.
Right now.
My personal opinion,
yeah.
I like him. I think I like where he's slotted. But when you're talking, he may be a casualty of having to go and get somebody, and he may be a guy that's
he could be a casualty.
You think he'll be here?
You think he's here through the whole?
I think he's going to be a part of it.
I would like him to. I'm just
basing it on the year he's having this year. He's been fantastic.
And they just gave him a six-year contract.
I agree, and it's great value. I just think that out of the players we're talking about, he would be my replaceable part.
Okay. I look more at the defensive side of things. I do think they need another top four defenseman.
Oh, my God.
They need
they need a Chalmerson, and then they need a stud after that.
But that's the thing. They're not getting that stud, like, unless they draft it.
Right.
Or Riley continues to grow.
Right.
You know, it's just you're not getting Nick Hedman. You're not getting Hedman out of nowhere, Victor Hedman. You're not getting Duncan Keith. It's not happening. So we can say you want it to happen. That's great. There's a lot of teams that want it to happen. You're
maybe
not getting
Tyson Berry.
But I don't consider him a number one. I don't consider him
a Norris
number
one
candidate type guy.
No, but he could be a top pairing guy.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. But that's my point is, do I think they could add to this to improve? Yes. Do I think they will? Yes. I think what became clear last summer was the limitation in terms of bringing in a top four is a guy like Adam Larson. You know, maybe they find the next Adam Larson, whoever that is. Maybe it's Matt Dumba. Maybe it's Tyson Berry. Maybe it's one of the defensemen in Anaheim.
Right.
But you're not getting
the
number one guy.
That's fair.
So that's why when I take a step back and I look at what they have in terms of what they can grow with, I think for the most part it's here. And I really do. I think Matthews, Kadri, Marner, Nylander, Riley, Gardner, Zaitsev, Anderson. That's kind of what you're going to build with and grow with and supplement with other players.
It's a nice core.
Let's bring in Ray. And Ray Ferraro on Overdrive is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. We had Lamoriello on yesterday and asked him if he feels like, you know, the blueprint of a core is already in place. And he was careful, which you would expect, because they haven't achieved anything yet. These guys are still too young. They haven't played enough games in the league. But he said he thinks there more than likely is, you know, five players that you can build around in the future, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I think for the most part the core is here if you're being realistic. You know, Drew Doughty's not coming here. Carlson's not coming here. Where do you stand on what they have in terms of building it into a championship caliber core?
Well, I think I like a lot the steps they've made so quickly. The next step is, you know, whether they make the playoffs or not this year, the next step is the difficult one. I mean, there's no way they can be a Stanley Cup contender, and I don't think anybody thinks that, with their defense. So you have to improve that defense pretty significantly. And where are you going to go find them? I'm just looking back through the teams that have won the Stanley Cup championship, and I think you can go back to 06 before you can find a team that didn't have a dominant number one defenseman or two of them. Like, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So where do you get them? And, like, if you think Riley is one of the two, where do you go find the other guy? Well, if you can't draft him, and this year, you know, there's the draft is certainly not of the caliber of the past couple of drafts. If you can't draft them, you're probably not getting them in free agency. So you'd have to make a deal. And that's where it'll get really interesting.
That's where
free agency.
Well,
free agency should be canceled these days.
No, you can't get
it. It should be, because you don't want to sit there July 1st.
Well, for 8 hours talking about a bit piece. How many times do you say bit piece during that show? Makes me sick.
Ray, I was going to actually go back to you're right with it, but that's where you build up all these assets so that you can grab somebody that maybe doesn't fit into a financial situation. I think of Winnipeg, for example. Is Byfuglien, Myers, and Trouba going to finish their contracts or finish on the right side for the Winnipeg Jets for the next 5 or 6 years?
No, yeah, probably not.
So if Winnipeg decides to move one of those guys, and let's just say Trouba because he wants to be moved, like, that's where you're going to have to give up something really good to get him.
And that's where people just don't get it. Like, they don't want to give up this player. They don't want to give up JVR. They don't want to give up Nylander. But if you don't give up a quality player, in today's game is different because of the way the cap has made everything have to fit. Eventually, if we eliminate the draft anytime soon, because even if you draft a guy, he's going to be years before he can make a significant impact, or you're not going to sign a guy, well, then you got to trade a guy. And you're going to have to trade somebody you don't necessarily want to trade if you want somebody to make a difference for you. If you want another guy, you can do that. If you want one of your top two guys, then you're going to have to trade something you don't probably like or something you don't want to trade.
Well, and even with that being the case, I think if you're being realistic, your highest hopes can be you get a guy who's as effective as Morgan Riley. Like you, right. You look at Edmonton right now, they're basically trying to build a defense by committee. Right. They traded Hall for Larson. Larson's a good player, certainly a top four guy, but by no means is he ever going to win a Norris Trophy.
Nope.
So
I think
if you don't
draft Brian at the top, that's what you have to do. You have to try and build a four-man group as opposed to having a Pronger or a Niedermeyer or a Duncan Keith or a Nick Lidstrom or a Zdeno Chara, which are all... or Chris Letang, those are all the number one defensemen over all the way back to 07. Like, unless you get one of those guys,
which
and I know some of them were
right,
acquired by trades, but that's a different time. You're not trading for Chris Pronger anymore.
No, but how about the idea of, this is a terrible term, but like picking at the carcass. For example, a team that wins the Stanley Cup and has to flush salaries. Like, we were talking about it when I did that Chicago game the other day. Panarin's contract will kick in. So who has to go? If it's Marcus Kruger, I understand, but maybe a guy like Hjalmarsson, because Seabrook doesn't have, you know, he's got a no trade, you got Duncan Keith on value. Like, maybe it is Hjalmarsson and his $4 million salary that they just can't afford. They'd shuffle. Like, that's where you can find value. Garth Snow found two defensemen that were pretty solid for him because another team couldn't afford to keep them in the mix. That's where Toronto may have to lay in the weeds and do that.
I think that's more than likely what they're going to do and what they're going to hope to do. But, again, I don't know if that changes kind of the conversation that we're having right now. When you look at what they have already built in, Matthews, Kadri, Marner, Nylander, Riley, Gartner, Zaitsev, Anderson, Babcock, that's kind of it. You know, right. Like that's – yeah, you might be able to add a fourth defenseman there. You might be able to get a two if you're lucky, maybe a three or a four. But ultimately, I think that's kind of what you're hoping builds into a championship-caliber team in the next 3 to 5 years.
I'll float this. Sorry to jump on you, Ray. I'll float this. What if it costs you William Nylander to get somebody a real bona fide three?
See, I really think there's I don't even think we've scratched it where Nylander's ceiling might be.
Yeah.
But – again, if it's you're not going to trade a lesser prospect and get a good player,
right,
or an impact player. You can get a good player, but if you're trading Nylander, you're looking at getting impact back. And unfortunately, that's the way it goes. That's the way you're going to have to work with other teams, and it's going to be a player like that. In a lot of cases, because the new team can afford his contract. Because don't forget, if we're talking about Chicago, just as a supposed, and they don't want a $4 million player back for Hjalmarsson. They're already paying him $4
million. Right.
They need somebody that plays a different position that costs a hell of a lot less, because they've got to start scraping nickels together to pay for Panarin.
Right.
And there is... at the other end of it, when you win a couple cups, or you are a very good team, you've got a couple of $10 million players that just chomp up your salary. Can you imagine where they'd be if Duncan Keith hadn't signed a 12-year contract?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, or Hossa, for that matter.
Keith's contract, though, I mean, as a defenseman, he's at $5 million.
Yeah.
Like, he's double that. He would have been when they would have won the three cups in 5 years if the timing was right. Heck, that contract's not even legal anymore.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, they've completely exonerated though, or completely gotten rid of any of those types of options, the long-term cap circumventing deals. And we've been talking about the Blue Jays a lot in the past couple of months, and players and agents maybe misreading the marketplace. I guess you could make the same argument with Keith. Like, I understand at the time you had 12 years of security and you're still making a lot of money. It was like a $60 million contract. So yeah. It's not like he's sleeping in the streets. But if he just signed a 3 or 4 year deal and came back up,
yeah,
guy'd be making a fortune right now. He'd be up there at $8, $9, $10 million a year. He would have signed the same deal as Taves and Kane, I would think.
I think some guys are just comfortable with term, though. I mean, Duncan, Ray, you know him. I know him. He just seems like he's content and happy.
Could you imagine sitting there with a piece of paper in front of you that says $60 million, and you're like, no, I'll take less years, and I'll get paid down the road. I wouldn't have the you-know-whats to turn that away.
No way.
I would have signed it, too.
Unfortunately for him, I think it's 30 now.
But that's the thing. Would you be bitter if you're sitting there today at all that money? Because that's the Bautista conversation. Bautista gave them a team-friendly deal. He was coming off a monster contract. He was a waiver wire pickup, essentially. He was a nobody, so you can understand why he didn't have that much leverage. But now all these different websites calculate how much a player actually should be getting paid. I think it was FanGraphs or something like that calculated it. And over the past 5 years when he's been on this team-friendly deal, he should have been paid like $160 million more than he actually was. And you know he's bitter. Like he's bitter about it.
I got this, Brian, I got this advice early in my career, and it really helped me when I would sign a contract, and it happened a few times, and then guys on my team would leapfrog me. And my agent, Steve Bartlett, gave me this advice, and it really helped me. He said, the second you sign that paper, don't let yourself look at other people's deals. You signed that paper because you were happy. You were satisfied and content. And being bitter does you no good. If Batista's bitter, well, he didn't have to sign those deals. He could have signed a shorter deal.
Right.
He didn't. If Duncan Keith is bitter, well, he could have signed a shorter deal. He didn't. He was thrilled when he signed it. I signed a deal. I was pumped. And then like 6 months later, guys are leapfrogging me all over the place. Like, well, that's the way it goes. I just signed a 3-year deal.
My second deal, my contract was structured so it was like $700, $750, $800, $550 the last year.
Why?
Well, exactly. What a brutal contract. I don't know what it was. I'll have to look it up. $700, $750, $800, $850, then $550. And at the end of I was not a bad player, and I said, there's no way in hell I'm coming to training camp. We had a defenseman on our team. I forget his name. I know his name, but I'm not going to say it. I'm like, this guy makes $1 million. I am not showing up to camp, and if I at least make the same amount of money as that guy. And then I was like, so am I going to get that? They're like, no, you get a qualifying offer. You have no rights to anything else. You either sign for 6'10", which is the raise, or you don't play hockey.
Yeah.
6'10", signed
leverage, but they had leverage on you. That's the thing.
I was so mad. I'm like, no way in hell am I showing up for less than $1 million because that guy makes $1 million and he stinks.
That's the thing. That's human nature. I hear what you're saying, Ray, about bitterness.
I'm like, that's all I get is 6'10". Well, not that sounds stupid, but I'm like, 6'10". They're like, yeah, that's your qualifying offer.
I'll show you. Yeah. I'm not okay, I'm coming in.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it's true, though. What are you going to do? I mean, if they have you over the barrel, it can go the opposite way. A lot of players hold teams over the barrel. That's the game you're
playing. That's the CBA, and you can use it against a player because the player will use that leverage against you in free agency.
I just wish I had a
player and you don't use that leverage, you're dumb.
Yeah, I agree, Ray.
Because they're going to use it on you. That CBA, man, they got lawyers sitting in their office that their job is to know that CBA in and out. And so if you've got the hammer, you better use it.
Well, it's so true. And that's why I always fight back against the idea that players should be taking team-friendly deals to help with the salary cap. Yeah, it's completely garbage. Get paid. It's a business. You're worth it. When you were on that entry-level deal and scored 40 and winning games in the playoffs, they didn't come to you and say, here's an extra $10 million because that's what you're worth.
Right.
They love the fact that they're only paying you $875. I mean, that's the way the CBA works. Go out there and get paid.
Well, it's funny. It's the game within the game, right? And I don't know when we all realized it, because it certainly wasn't your first contract that you were just so happy to sign. But you're like, oh, man, this is actually business now.
Yeah.
Hell, I signed my first contract. I signed it in a dressing room in the Hartford Civic Center. I had these dreams of, when you used to think about signing your contract, like there's going to be a press conference. Hell, I was like, the general manager, Emil Francis, said, hey, got your contract coming here, a full side room. I signed it. It was actually kind of close to Zamboni. Walked in there, signed my contract, and walked out of there. I'm like, well, hell, there's nobody else around. I guess that's it.
It's amazing what goes on behind the scenes. You think it's this grand, party or all these elaborate situations. I remember having a real, heart-to-heart with a general manager who pulled me out, wanted to give me heck. He took me into a bathroom stall. There was a guy taking a dump next to us, and he's giving me heck.
Was that an analogy for how you were playing?
Pretty much. It was kind of funny, but I remember thinking, there's got to be other places you can
That's one
have
way
this
to send
conversation.
A message. You're playing now,
did
that
you pick
guy.
Your number? You must have, right?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was drafted in 92 in the OHL, and I just kept it to the OHL.
And then when you got to the NHL, they just let you keep it, right?
Well, no. Bobby Gorman, the trainer in Hartford, he came up to me and he goes, what number do you want to wear? And I said, 92. He goes, oof. He's like, you're a rookie. You don't really. I go, that's the number I want. And he goes, I'll try to pass it up the chain. And I got it.
Wow.
See, I got called up in December. I figured I'd get to pick my number. I got up and number 26 was there with my. I went to the morning skate. And, I got called up in the morning, went to the morning skate, went out on the ice. I didn't even know what number I was wearing. I came back for the game, and number 26 was hanging in my stall. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's my number. I certainly wasn't going to ask for a different one unless they gave me one in Binghamton again. So I just, that's how I got my number.
That's right.
I thought I would get to pick it. And, Ray, which of these eight numbers do you want? How about here, take this one, dummy, and wear it.
And it's the one that was probably already pre-made, and they just slapped your name bar on the back.
Of course it was. You think they specially made that?
No, they're not doing extra work for you.
If you your name bar, you can see three other guys' names stitched under it.
Exactly.
It's 3 inches deep.
In preseason, they've got those Velcro name bars on there. And they just rip them off and rip them on and slide them on for other players. You're not a permanent player if you've got Velcro on your back.
Yeah, that's a problem for sure. We were talking about the apathy surrounding the Ovechkin versus Crosby rivalry, but the truth is there isn't another player versus player rivalry that even comes close. There isn't even one I can really think of. There used to be with fighters. You see different fighters that you knew there was a rivalry because you knew they were going to fight, but that doesn't happen anymore. And Ovechkin's got the chance at history tonight. He can record his 1,000th point. It'll be his 880th game. So needless to say, that's a remarkable feat. But I was detailing this earlier that this kind of reminds me of when Jagr got to second all-time in points, and all it did for me was highlight the greatness of Gretzky. Because I was looking at the numbers this morning, Kevin Gibson sent that email out, and Ovechkin's got 999 points in 879 games. Crosby has 982 points in 740 games. He's played 139 less games, and he's 17 points behind him. How remarkable is that?
And don't forget, there were long stretches there where, not stretches, but that one stretch when Sid came back from the, I don't know which concussion it was, but we were talking about, is he done as a dominant player? Or is he, is he going to be, because he had some pretty pedestrian, by his standard, point totals. And the number of games that he's put points up in the era that he's played is pretty remarkable. And for Ovechkin to put up the number of goals that he has in this era, I really have, I really shake my head thinking of fans and or media or even some of the hockey people we talk to trying to build a case against the greatness of either of them. Like 542 goals, are you kidding me? In this era? He's by miles the top scorer.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll ever be recognized, Ray, as the greatest goal scorer of all time?
Oh, boy. He's got to throw another couple hundred up, doesn't he?
That's like the thing, though. Is Gretzky considered the greatest goal scorer of all time? He's got the most goals, right?
He's got to be.
But you think of him as a playmaker and an assist guy.
That's scary.
Right. And then it's somebody brought this up, I don't know, it was about a month ago, and Gord Miller had mentioned that, you know, when Richard retired, he had 100 more goals than anybody else in the history of the game. 100. You know, Phil Esposito led the league in goals 6 times in a row. He had 76 goals. Mike Bossy scored 50 goals 9 straight times. Like, that's crazy stuff. Like, all those guys, are they? They got to be in the conversation for the greatest goal scorer of all time. And then you go, oh, yeah, Gretzky had 802. Like, how could he not be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough, man. It's tough to knock 99 off.
My first contract.
He didn't break an egg with his shot, but who the hell cared? He was in the right spot all the time.
My first contract was worse than I thought.
Really?
800, 850, 900, 550.
That was your first contract?
Yeah.
Oh, screw you, seriously.
Yeah. I'm not talking about the amount, just the structure.
So it went from, what, 900 to 550? Why would it tail when you're going to get better?
Because of the qualifying.
Because the team got you.
You needed that 10. Back then, it was a 10% raise just to qualify you. So they would always make that last year a bottom feeder number. So
right when you're turning the corner.
610.
Like, wouldn't you flip it around 550, 800, 850, 900?
Right. That's what I would. That's what you'd think, right?
Who was your agent?
I'm not discussing that.
Okay. So, see, my contract climbed through each of my first 3 years. 70, 80, 90.
Yeah.
We got a
22
buddy.
Grand in the minors.
You play in the 40s? When did you play?
How do you make ends meet on that?
I had a car when my second year. I always remember this because I didn't have any money. I bought a Honda Civic.
I didn't either, and I was making
$800. It was standard. So it was 10 grand. And the guys told me it was the worst car in the league. They're like, you got to park over there. I'm like, I got no money. So like, go park over there.
So I'm assuming you didn't pull a Ricky Henderson and frame your first check.
I'll never forget, Ray, you talk about bad cars. Kent Manderville got traded to Carolina, and Trevor Kidd walked in and said, who drives that piece of garbage out in the parking lot? Kent Manderville's first day, he puts up his hand, and he goes, that's my ride, buddy. It's just like, it was so horrifying.
Nice introduction to the room.
Who drives the piece of garbage K car out there?
K car, Reliant K. Those were good cars.
Yeah, now you walk into the parking lot and you're like, ooh, that's nice. That's better.
It's incredible,
that's even better.
Isn't it? Even the rookie on the lowest contract in the league's driving a BMW or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And in the minors, if the thing had wheels, that was good enough.
Exactly. No kidding.
Do you remember Sean Poudin?
Yes.
Poudin had a car that the transmission, something screwed up with it. They lived a block and a half away from the rink. The car only went in reverse. So they would drive when it rained. They would drive in reverse to the rink, swoop around the building, and drive backwards back home.
That is outstanding. Tell me he had like his head out the window, like Ace Ventura.
And he goes, "Yeah, it wasn't bad. You get used to it after a while. Your car only goes backwards." Like,
imagine trying to explain that to insurance if you cause an accident. And you try to talk yourself out of it like
no
it wasn't
choice.
Your problem.
This baby only goes one way.
Not my fault, man.
That's awesome.
I had to get to the rink. It's raining. All right, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Talk to you, boy.
Ray on Overdrive is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. They'll get you out of your timeshare guaranteed or give you a complete refund with offices in Toronto or visit timeshareexitteam.ca. Jerry checks in next. All right, Jerry's Percentages is brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands. Darren Dreger in studio in about an hour. Jerry checking in every Wednesday around this time. We know how the game is played. Let's hear the intro for Jerry.
Yeah.
You're going to want to hear this.
Jerry's percentages.
No, no, keep the booing.
You're all pigeons. Filthy, filthy pigeons.
Get down here now. It's Jerry.
All right, so my understanding is Jerry might be getting a little bit political this week.
Really?
Well, it's a big day. Donald Trump speaking with the media today for the first time in a long time. So let's see what Jerry has up his sleeve this week.
Donald Trump will either resign or be impeached before the end of his first term. And Pootsie Pootsie will be rattled.
Pootsie Pootsie will be rattled. I'm low on this.
I am too.
He's not going to resign. He does not have it in him to resign. Think about everything he's been through already, and he's still sticking around. He's going in the White House. Getting a president impeached is very difficult to do. I mean, these
I'm
allegations.
Go 15%.
15%? You think he's getting through all 4 years? Noodles?
22%.
I'm going to go a bit higher.
There's going to be some scandals. Like, let's not make any mistakes.
These alleged, you know, documents that are out there that his camp and the Russians were in cahoots leading up.
Let's not forget, people are on a witch hunt for this guy. The media, the
you are fake news.
People that didn't vote for him, like, they haven't gone down quietly. You got all these
true, but let's also not forget that any president, that applies to all of them.
Right.
Republicans have been after Obama for 8 years. Them, you know, that it's not exclusive to him. But I hear what you're saying.
I just feel like it's a lot louder with Trump around.
He probably doesn't do himself any favors, but I'll go 30%. I think he's probably going to get through the 4 years. The idea of a second term, it's a bit of a different story.
At least one pro team will turn down an invitation to the White House in 2017.
Won't be an NHL team, though. Not on Jerry's clock.
So, not the NHL, but this was interesting. I read last night the Cubs are going to sneak in a visit to Obama next week before he leaves the White House.
Well, so, he's a Chicago guy.
He is a Chicago guy. That's a quick turnover. That's a lot quicker than usual.
Dude, it's...
I've never seen that before.
Like 6 months quick. Earlier than any other organization I've ever heard of.
Right. It's generally during the season.
I think 100% of teams going to deny that trip to the White House.
You think so?
Of course.
I could see like the Cavs or the Warriors. I'm looking at the NBA, maybe the NFL. Well, the NFL, you know, I don't know how the owners would react to that with non-guaranteed contracts. I'm low on this though. I think there's a good chance they're all going to show up. I'll say 25% of teams says no dice. To the White House invitation.
I think 100% a team's going to say no way. What if LeBron says we're not going?
Then they're not going.
That's right.
Wouldn't that be a story? Wow.
But is it mandatory that you have to go?
No, it's not.
No,
Talk to Tim Thomas about that.
No, not from a team standpoint. Is it mandatory or is it tradition?
It's tradition.
I would argue that Trump's not, if he'll get wind that somebody's going to say no, and he'll not invite them.
Well, look at his response to Meryl Streep. Like, this guy's Twitter tirade, if he finds out a team isn't going to accept the invitation, be 45 tweets in a row.
That team was lucky to win anyway.
Oh, right. Yeah. Always overrated LeBron James.
All I'm saying is I think O's right. There will be somebody that wants to make a statement, but...
There's teams already boycotting their hotels.
They may just be going in a different direction, and it may just be like, we're just not going to make this happen.
Same thing, though.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
All right, I'm going to say 51%.
Right. You're in the majority on that.
Alex Ovechkin will finish with more career points than Sidney Crosby.
Well, he's ahead of him right now, but as we've been detailing throughout the day, he's played 139 more games than him, and he's only got 17 more points than Sid. What are the chances Ovi does end his career with more points than Crosby?
I'm going to say 65% because I don't know how long Sid's going to play.
I think Ovi's going back to the K at some point. You tell him he can't go to the Olympics, he may take his net and go home.
That's the thing. I would counter the Sid trepidation with the Ovi trepidation, too, where he might just say,
at some point,
I want to go home.
Alex Ovechkin wants to win a Stanley Cup.
And you think if he does that, he's KHL bound?
I would like a Jerry's percentage at some point that Alex Ovechkin will play in the KHL in his career.
Okay, maybe next week Jerry will slide that in.
So that's why I'm going to say Sid is going to get more points than Ovi in his career, because I said... I think Sid will be here longer.
I think there's a chance Sid blows by him this year. I mean, Ovi's not even in the top 25 in points.
My number is 89%.
So you think Ovi?
No, sorry.
You're the opposite.
I'm saying Sid, 89%, is going to get more than.
Okay, well, so 11% then.
For the guy, yeah, 11%.
11%.
Yeah. I'm low on this, too, because I think Crosby will pass him. I think they're both going to play around the same amount of games. And you look at the pace Crosby's on right now. Ovi can score. He's not racking up assists. I'll say 15%. 15%. I think Crosby, again, by the end of the year, he might pass him, the way things are going right now.
Curtis McElhaney will finish the season as the Maple Leafs' backup.
No more flip-flopping, Babs. He's 6'3".
He is 6'3". So Jerry's saying, this is it. This is the guy. By the time they get to the end of the season, McElhaney will still be on the team and be the primary backup.
I'm going to say 80%. Yeah, I just got a good feeling about it. I know nothing about the guy. I just know he's a career
backup.
But I just got a good feeling about it. 80%.
I want it to be 80, and I'm going to say even higher, just because I think that's knowing the player and knowing how important that position is. I'm going to say 87%, but it's all in his. He's got to play well. Like, that's the truth.
Well, and Babcock has to trust
him. I think he's at an age and the experience, Brian, where he's not going to be intimidated by anything. I just think he's going to be a good, solid veteran presence and get the job done.
I'm going to be in the majority on this because they've traded Enroth. I can't believe they got a draft pick for Enroth. Like, watch that seventh rounder in 2018 turn into the next Nick Lidstrom. It'll be. I can't believe Anaheim gave a pick for
him. How the hell you got a draft pick? That's
good for them.
Well, and it's good for Anaheim, too. They've covered themselves off. Like, if they think they're going to go deep in the playoffs.
Yeah, they got some depth there.
They got some depth in that position.
But so from that standpoint, I want to say 100%, but I don't trust Babcock in terms of him fully trusting McElhaney. If McElhaney, you know, craps the bed two or three times in a row, Babcock will sell him right down the river.
Yeah.
So I can't go at 100%.
No.
I'll say 90%.
Here's another
90%.
Thing to add on to that quickly is Babs has got to give him some solid starts too. That's the thing. Like, he's going to get some crappy starts, three games in four nights, but it'd be nice to throw him a bone in like a front end of a
You think he'd start at the Garden on Friday night?
I don't think. I think they've got to. They may have to roll Anderson both nights.
Ah, yikes, man. Yeah, I mean, you could. You're coming out of a break, for sure. They've done it already. But that'll be three back-to-backs in 3 weeks for Anderson.
Well, that's what starters
do. I don't think Braden Holtby.
Like, this is the thing that drives me nuts. Like, they're acting like back-to-backs, like he's. It's the worst thing in the world. Goalies have been doing it for years. Braden Holtby has no problem doing it. You want to be an elite goaltender in this league? Rene can do it. Holtby can do it. Martin Jones can do it. Cam Talbot can do it. Why can't Frederik Andersen?
Well, because he's never done it before.
But that's, you want to get to the next threshold as an elite goaltender. Roberto Luongo can do it. All of these guys do it. It perplexes me that all of a sudden people have the answers. You got to do this. No, you don't. I'd take 80% of Frederik Andersen ahead of anybody on a second night.
I guess it comes down to what have you done for us lately, and he was awful against the Habs.
Yeah, he didn't play well.
And that. You know, would Bebo have been any better? Who knows? Obviously, we don't know.
In hindsight, you can't challenge that.
All right, let's see what Jerry has. I think he's got one more hot take.
Derrick Rose will re-sign with the Knicks this summer.
If they can find him.
Well, I was reading a couple of things this morning. I was doing a lot of reading.
He wants a max contract of $150
million. 5 years, $150 million. That's what he wants at the end of the year. This guy could not be more delusional. That's more delusional than Bautista at spring training a year ago.
There's my daily dope.
That kind of comment.
DJ in Atlanta?
In Atlanta.
And this character right here.
Yes. And I also read, though, that there are reports he is thinking or was thinking when he took off to Chicago about taking an extended period of time off. So you might be leaning towards leaving the game, but you also somehow want a max deal.
What did you say about the time off?
Well, he left to Chicago, as we know. But there was a report that he was thinking about staying away from the team even longer. Like, he was thinking, I got to get out of here for a while. I don't know if that means days, weeks, months.
Right.
But after this last showing, if I'm the Knicks, although the Knicks are so dysfunctional, I can't say 0%. Because the Knicks are stupid and they might re-sign him, but I have to give them some sort of a benefit of a doubt that they'll figure things out. 25%.
I'm 1%. I think it's just wishful thinking.
Yeah. At the end of the year, see you later. Take both parties go their own way.
10%.
Yeah. It's the Knicks, though. They're such
idiots.
They're such a dysfunctional operation. Anyway, that's Jerry for the week.
Good Jerry's. Way to work.
Jerry was solid.
Pretty good, actually.
Strong.
Very strong. Salute to Jerry.
Little political, but outside of that, he was good.
Well, you could argue some of that was fake news.
Fake news.
You are fake news.
I have a feeling that might be joining the
for sure
soundbite routine here on Overdrive.
Well, we should do it.
What's that?
You have a couple reports, and we say fake news or real news.
Yes.
Should we come up with a segment revolving around fake news?
Yeah. I eat difficult conversations for breakfast.
I like it.
Or possible trade scenarios, and we say fake news or real news.
All right.
Wow.
Let's put some thought into that.
All right.
There you go. We're really rolling today.
We can kick up the O-Desk for that.
Mm-hmm.
Go over the O-Desk. What
Let's
do you got
creative.
For us? But then he's going to have Joe from the Bridge trades. Like, we've got John Tavares for
That's fine.
Connor
That's
Brown.
Fake news, but you never know. News. Maybe it'll be real news.
There we go.
You got to mix in a variety of options here. Dreger in studio on the 6 p.m. hour. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. All right, Darren Dreger will join us in studio at 6:20. Raptors coming off a big win last night. DeMar DeRozan was dominant. 41 points, career high in rebounds. They were creeping towards, slump territory, losing against quality teams like Golden State and San Antonio and Houston. The Bulls, they're an okay team, but they always seem to have the Raptors' number. We know what happened over the weekend in Chicago, and Raptors were on pace to blow that game last night, and they stormed back in the fourth quarter. And that's the sign of a good team, right? You're constantly busting through slumps. You just don't allow yourself to get into that point where you're worried that this could start to fall off a cliff. And that's what they kind of saved themselves from in the fourth quarter last night.
In all my times in the locker rooms, you lose two or three, it would be like, okay, guys, and somebody would say, good teams win this one. Like, you got to win this game.
Right.
Or else you're looking at something that continues and rolls out and it's real bad.
Well, and that's, like, this is such a degenerate angle to play, but if you are gambling, like, that is a perfect example where you just know those good teams. If they've lost two in a row.
Yeah. Like, if Cleveland loses two in a row.
They're winning. Game three, they are winning, especially in the NBA where teams are racking up 60, 65 wins. You just don't see it happen. Golden State, San Antonio, Cleveland. And the Raptors are not quite at that level, but they're close enough where they're an elite team. They're a top six or seven team in the league. And regardless of who they're playing, and Boston's a good team, and it's a team they might have to face in the second round of the playoffs if they're both lucky enough to get through the first. But that was a big win and a borderline statement, I think, to their own fans and their organization. Settle down. We're all good. We'll get this thing back on the right track. Floyd Mayweather was on ESPN today talking about the super fight with Conor McGregor. We'll tell you a little bit about that. We'll play some audio, and we'll get back into our Maple Leaf core conversation with Dregs at 6:20. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.